The Nature Stories podcast, where people and place intersect. This week on the Nature Stories podcast, more stories from the heart of the land, a new public radio series which considers the connection between people and the natural world. I'm Samantha Brown. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Here's Stories from the Heart of the Land host, Jay Allison.
We in radio like to think we're pretty good at conjuring the splendor of nature and the feelings it evokes. But we know you think nature documentary and right away you think TV. Indeed, some folks think about those TV programs a lot.
I think my favorite subjects are rainforests.
There was a night where we'd be like, are we in the mood for insects tonight? I don't know.
African cats.
I grew up in the suburbs of Illinois. You didn't see a lot of lions.
And
elephants on the beach.
Just anything to do with the water.
What did it start with? Blue Planet?
I think Blue Planet was sort of the thing that really kicked it off.
Our planet is a blue planet. Over 70% of it is covered by the sea.
And this is their prophet.
David Attenborough.
He's the father of this kind of program.
Life of Mammals, Planet Earth.
Life of Birds.
The superb fairy wren.
You suddenly have this great empathy for the natural world via him.
And if it isn't David Attenborough, it's some show on PBS or Animal Planet, but really, it's David Attenborough. His devotees are a kind of species all their own, and we wondered what it would sound like if he did a program about them. It might start like this.
Fans of nature documentaries tend to nest in an urban setting, like this one, Brookline, Massachusetts.
Our guide is Sean Cole, and that's not his real voice.
Thanks for blowing it. This is Ariel Glassman's habitat. She's 25, lives with her boyfriend.
Thank you very much.
And when you see their apartment,
it's Brookline and it's small, but
it's tiny. So you can understand why she has 75 nature documentaries in her Netflix queue.
Life in the Undergrowth, National Geographic Africa, The Life of Birds, Blue Planet.
Three of those are by David Attenborough. And his latest program, Planet Earth, was running Sundays at 8 o'clock on TV, the same time as the PBS show Nature.
So my nature shows are competing with each other.
Except there's already a Planet Earth DVD.
That my boyfriend and I managed to get a Canadian copy of before the series even premiered here.
Oh my God, you had a bootleg copy.
I had a bootleg copy.
And why?
I have lived in cities or fairly dense suburban areas my whole life, and there's only so much access you get to the natural world in those places. And I think it's fantastic for me to be able to take a look at places I've never been, probably never see with my own eyes.
Why do you say you may never get to go there?
Because I can't afford to go there.
Actually, Ariel spent a lot of her childhood in Amherst, Mass. There are no tigers there, but it's really leafy and green, and she had a lot more time to frolic in the grass back then. She told me about this one time. She was with a friend, and they stumbled across a kind of hidden canyon in the woods. And, for a little kid, that's like happening upon a Mayan ruin.
I was just struck by it. We literally just went through a thicket of trees, and we just came out, and here it was. It taught me how striking the natural world could be, how it could just take you by surprise. It was sort of the gateway moment.
A gateway to watching nature shows on TV.
If I hadn't had those experiences, I'm not sure I'd be as interested today in, what I can see on the television, from Nature or PBS or Discovery Channel.
And yes, Ariel knows that sounds backwards, but it's like that moment burned a permanent question mark into her brain. And the nature shows are these little exclamation points. It's an intellectual thing for her, in terms of science, but also in terms of where she, Ariel, fits into the animal kingdom. For example, watching Life of Mammals by David Attenborough, she felt like she wasn't so superior to other beings with hair.
It's kind of grounding because we are still in reality mammals, just like that squirrel on my tree out there.
When a squirrel finds a white acorn, it always eats it immediately because otherwise it would soon germinate.
Ariel and I sat down to watch Life of Mammals at one point.
On the other hand, red acorns like this one are almost always buried as a store for winter.
And then, weeks later, when I mentioned to a completely different person that I'd seen the show...
Did you see the part about the acorns?
Yeah.
Where they knew what to do with the two different kinds of acorns?
Yeah
that, I saw that one.
Really?
Yeah, it's
that was
fascinating.
Amazing.
This is Melissa Guillaume. She once drew a picture of four ducks playing volleyball and one of a rhino having cocktails with a warthog. She's an illustrator and a really big David Attenborough fan.
I almost have a little bit of a crush on him, you know what I mean?
Her husband, who's also named David, knows this.
I mean, if I have to lose her to somebody, I respect Attenborough.
For a Manhattan apartment, their place is pretty big. though it got a little smaller last year when their daughter Holly was born.
I would love to go to New Zealand tomorrow, but it's not going to happen.
So David Attenborough does most of their traveling for them.
I'm on Lord Howe Island, a tiny speck of land 300 miles off the east coast of Australia.
You know, I feel like the human being has a certain, like, range of things they have to get. It's like you have to have interactions with people, and you have to sleep, and you have to play, and you have to interact with plants and animals. I don't know. I really think it's like it has to happen.
And that's the way you do it.
And I guess that's the way that we're doing it right now.
And sometimes, as though they'd just gotten back from an actual vacation, they find themselves telling their friends about the exotic places they've seen.
Yeah, I think I've had that experience of boring people at a, you know, well, then you should have seen, because then the polar bear came out of hibernation.
It's funny, I never really thought about it, but recently I've started to think that maybe we're getting a reputation among our friends for watching kind of a weird amount of this stuff.
It's true. One of their friends told me that they could discuss this IMAX movie about beavers, quote, at great length.
One night under a full moon, Mr. Beaver, male beaver, comes over and starts kind of chattering amorously to the female beaver. And they sort of do this moonlight pas de deux where they actually rear up on their hind legs and embrace each other with their little claws and go tottering back and forth in the moonlight. And the camera sort of considerately pans right, sort of away from the little beavers or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, cut to baby beavers in Beaver Lodge.
Of course, beavers aren't exactly travel to Africa animals.
I guess there are beavers probably within 10 miles of where we're sitting.
Donal O'Shea lives in San Jose now, but he grew up in Ireland, watching David Attenborough on the BBC. And unlike a lot of nature show fans, he's been all over the world. Been to South Africa a bunch of times.
I've had the opportunity to go up to the game parks, and I've only gone once, so it's much more comfortable to sit in your living room and watch it on TV than to actually run the risk of catching malaria and all the rest of it.
I can huff and puff to the top of the mountain.
This is Ariel again.
But David Attenborough's not going to follow me all the way up in a helicopter giving me all the details about, you know, the antelope that's 20 yards to my left that I can't even see.
And this is the very simple but very important idea that kept rearing up as I talked to these folks. On TV, the animals are so close, and they're doing such interesting things. And in person, they'd be too skittish or bloodthirsty or just plain boring to sit and be awed by. But there's something even more basic that nature shows offer, something more gut level than the awe factor. And that is the awe factor.
There is definitely a cute factor. On planet Earth, there's this footage of a mother polar bear and her little babies, just as they're coming out of the hibernating den.
Her cubs gaze out of their bright new world for the very first time.
They can barely walk. They've never eaten anything other than their mother's milk.
The female calls them. But this steep slope is not the easiest place to take your first steps.
And it just, you know, all of a sudden one of them just tumbles, you know, and it's so cute.
Which, you know, cuddling up to a polar bear would be not something that would be recommended, but to watch them is a warming feeling.
And then when the narrator says,
but they are hungry.
Unfortunately, you know, reality is cruel, and the mother and the bear cubs will have to find food within a week now, or they're going to starve. That's when I always start to kind of go, oh.
That is where she hunts for the seals she needs to feed her cubs, and she must get there before the ice breaks up.
And then when they show them tracking down the baby, like, seal pup, and you know they're going to eat it, you know, you have that moment where you're like. And actually, Dave and I have this expression. We'll say, end of seal pup, continuation of polar bear. You know, because we have to remind ourselves that there's a good side of that story, you know.
Have you ever gotten emotional watching a nature program?
Oh, of course. Yeah, horribly. Yeah. Actually, especially after the birth of our child, I would say it's actually gotten worse.
There was some kind of nature show on. And I remember seeing this bird hatch out of the egg, and the parents sort of nuzzling it, and Yeah, as a parent of a, you know, whatever she was, 4 weeks old or something at that time. Yeah, Melissa and I just looked at each other and we both had tears in our eyes and... You can't help but relate to the helplessness of a baby when you're a parent.
Whether it's on TV or not.
Oh yeah, sure.
And whether it's human or not.
There's a certain kind of religious component to it almost. You know, you're getting a view of the world, of life, of existence that is outside you and your normal experience. I mean, I'm getting a bit carried away about the whole thing now, but it just kind of forces you to recognize that by no means are you and the people around you and the human race the only things to be considered or thought about or worried about.
And if this were a David Attenborough documentary, that's probably how it would end.
So, as always in the life of mammals, what you eat determines what you are.
Because in the ocean, every turn of the tide spells the difference between life and death somewhere. We can ensure that there is still a place on Earth for birds in all their beauty and variety. If we want to. And surely we should.
Sean Cole is from Boston, Massachusetts. Sean's story comes from our series Stories from the Heart of the Land, produced by Atlantic Public Media. This podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. Find out more on the podcast and the series at nature.org/stories. Bill Frizzell composed and performed our music. Join me next week for a field trip to New York City's American Museum of Natural History. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown.